I hope now I have clarified the importance of feelings and how we need to have a good vocabulary of feelings and express them openly. But it's also important that we take responsibility for our feelings, that we in no way imply that what others say or do can ever make us feel as we do. We knew this probably when we were very young. You probably learned your own version of a rhyme that was said by the children in my neighborhood. It went like this: sticks and stones can break my bones, but names can never hurt me. Even at age 6, we had the awareness that we had a choice as to how we react to things, that other people's names could only hurt us depending on how we took it. But we probably lost that wisdom as we got exposed to people who tried to use guilt to manipulate us, who tried to get us to believe that our behavior could create their pain. We therefore started to take responsibility for their feelings. Now, the word responsibility means response-able. We can only be responsible for that which we're able to control. We can't control how people interpret our behavior. Therefore, we're not responsible for their interpretations or the feelings that follow their interpretations. We are responsible for our behavior, for our intentions. Likewise, other people are responsible for their intentions in relationship to us. They are responsible for what they say or do. And we are responsible for how we take it. And how we take it will depend on how we feel. Therefore, our feelings are a result of what we choose to do, so we are responsible for our feelings. So in nonviolent communication, we follow any expression of feelings with the words, because I. I'm feeling hurt, because I. I'm feeling pleased, because I. Never, you make me feel, or I feel angry because you. No, always, I feel because I. Now, developmentally, that's important to be conscious that whatever feelings we have, it's a result of how we take things. So it's important to be conscious of what's going on in our head that creates our feelings. Unfortunately, we have been programmed to think in a way that what goes on in our head most of the time is not what's alive in us or others, but what's in our head much of the time are these moralistic judgments that have been programmed into us. These programmed judgments, they create the following feelings: anger, guilt, depression, and shame. So when we put our judgments outward and think that what other people are doing is sick, bad, stupid, inappropriate, etc., we're likely to feel angry. But then it's important for us to be conscious that it isn't what they did that makes us angry, it's how we took it. If we're feeling depressed, guilt, shame, it's not other people who make us feel that way. It's how we are interpreting ourselves that makes us feel those feelings. So it's very important to be conscious that it's how we're thinking that causes those kind of feelings. But when we communicate with others, we want to communicate not from those thoughts that we have about them. We want to communicate from life, from our needs. Therefore, we can use those feelings, anger, guilt, depression, and shame, to make us conscious that at that moment, we're really not connected to our needs. We're up in our head, analyzing in a judgmental way. So what we need to learn to do is quickly identify those judgments that are causing us to feel those anger, guilt, depression, shame, and to be conscious that behind those judgments, at the root of them, is always our needs. It's our needs that are the root. Unfortunately, we haven't been trained to go directly to the root. We've been trained to go up to our head. But we can go back now. We can see the need behind the judgment. And so in other sessions, I will be describing particularly how to handle anger and how to slow down and see the thoughts that are making us angry and how to connect with the needs. But for now, I'd like to just concentrate on how we can develop a rich vocabulary of needs and always express our feelings to others with reference to our needs. So I want to repeat that moralistic judgments, criticisms, diagnoses, and interpretations of others are all alienated expressions of our needs. If someone says, "You never understand me," obviously they're telling us their need for understanding is not being fulfilled. If a life partner says, "You've been working late every night this week, you love your work more than you love me," she's saying that her need for intimacy is not being met. When we express our needs indirectly through the use of evaluations, interpretations, and images, others are likely to hear criticism. And when people hear anything that sounds like criticism, they tend to invest their energy in self-defense or counterattack. If we're wishing a compassionate response from others, it's therefore self-defeating to express our needs in the form of interpretations or diagnoses of the behavior of others. The more directly we can connect our feelings to our own needs, the easier it is and the more natural it is for others to respond compassionately to our needs. But as I say, most of us have never been taught to think in terms of needs. We have been programmed to think about what's wrong with others when our needs aren't being fulfilled. Thus, if we want our children to hang a coat up in the closet, and we say they're lazy for leaving it on the couch, it doesn't make doing that task joyful for the child. Or if we interpret our coworkers as being irresponsible when they don't go about their tasks as we would like, it doesn't make it joyful for them to change their behavior. I was once asked to mediate between two tribes that were at war in northern Nigeria. In 1 year, a quarter of the population had been killed. It wasn't easy for my associate to get everybody in a room together. There had been so much violence between the two sides. To get the chiefs together was a major effort on my colleague's part. But he was successful, and now I'm in a room with 12 chiefs from one side and 12 chiefs from the other. And I asked them this question. I said, "Let's begin by getting clear what everyone's needs are that aren't getting met. I'm confident that when we get clear about the needs that aren't being met, we'll find a way to get everybody's needs met. So who would like to start? What needs of yours are not getting met?" A chief from the Christian tribe screamed across the table, "You people are murderers!" Immediately a response came back, "You people have been trying to dominate us." This is sadly what I see going on in almost every conflict that I'm asked to mediate in. Instead of knowing how to say what's alive in themselves, people only know how to express these judgments. So my job in that case is to translate their judgments into their needs and help the other side see the need and leave off the enemy images. So when the chief said, "You people are murderers," I said, "Chief, are you saying that your need for security isn't being met in this situation?" He looked at me and he said, "That's exactly what I'm saying." Well, of course, he didn't say that. He probably hadn't been trained to think in terms of needs. But needs, I think, are always a more truthful expression of what's alive in people than these judgments of others that we've been trained to make. So having got his need for safety clear, I turned to a chief from the other side of the table and said, "Would somebody from this side just repeat back the chief's needs so I'm sure we're all connecting?" And the person who responded said, "Then why did you kill my child?" Well, of course, with such tension between the two sides, it wasn't easy for me to help the other party to hear the first party's needs. But finally, he heard that the other person had a need for safety. Then I helped the other side translate their judgment of, "You have been trying to dominate us," into their needs. And I said to that chief, "Are you saying you have a need for equality that isn't being met in this situation?" And he said, "That's exactly what I'm saying." And I helped the other side to hear that. Now, to get that far, to get both sides to see that the needs involved, on the one hand, were safety, a need for equality. There were some others, but it took us well over an hour and a half just to get the first two needs expressed, just to get them both to see that the need for safety and equality were involved in this conflict. At that point, a chief that hadn't spoken yet said to me in a very animated way, "If we know how to communicate this way, we don't have to kill each other." And that has been my experience. When we have a language of life, a language of needs, it's amazing how conflicts which seem impossible to resolve themselves